DiscerningHearts.com now presents Holy Thursday 2020 with Deacon James Keating. This is a special audio version of a Skype conversation that was held with Deacon Keating. It can be viewed as a video either on DiscerningHearts.com or on the Discerning Hearts YouTube channel. Deacon Keating is the Director of Theological Formation for the Institute for Priestly Formation, located at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. He's the author of numerous spiritual books, is a highly regarded retreat leader, having conducted over 400 group spiritual retreats. He is also a feature contributor to Discerning Hearts. We now present The Mystery of Holy Thursday 2020 with Deacon James Keating. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Deacon Keating, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
We are about to enter into the holiest of times in the church, the Great Triduum. And the first liturgy that's experienced, because actually it's one long celebration, isn't it? It covers the expanse of the days leading up to Easter, correct?
Yes, we break it up so our minds can actually appreciate the depth of the mystery. But yes, it's one event, the Triduum, one event.
And it begins with the celebration in the evening, Holy Thursday, of the great commemoration of the Lord's Supper and the washing of the feet. This year it's going to be very different. Social distancing that really doesn't allow for the washing of the feet, does it?
Mm-hmm. No feet this year.
No.
No feet will be present.
No, but it's such a beautiful celebration. It also commemorates the institution of really the priesthood, doesn't it?
Yes, priesthood service. There's a little hint of diaconate in there. He asks the apostles to do the foot washing in memory of him, or do as I do. Just it's very like an echo of the words of the institution of the Eucharist. You know, do this in memory of me. So those two actions on Holy Thursday: do this for the washing of the feet, and do this for this is my body, this is my blood. So like the fullness of holy orders is there. Mm-hmm. And we celebrate that because without holy orders, there's no power of salvation that's unleashed in the sacramental economy. And we would just be void, or it would be devoid of his presence and his power through the things of the earth. And that's the beauty of the sacraments. We get both the presence and the power of Jesus through the things of the earth. That's what makes the sacrament so accessible. The human body of the priest, oil, water, wine, bread. So simple, so humble, so accessible. Again, the meditation of God's great love for us, that he is generously available through the things of the earth. And that's what makes our sacramental system so mind-bogglingly joyful, is that when we really are in a sacramental imagination as Catholics, our joy deepens because we realize, my gosh, we are so loved. It's not like he said, you have to go up this mountain and find me. I'll come to you as bread, and I'll come to you in oil, and I'll come to you. My power will come to you through the waving of a hand and a blessing. I will do all that for you. And you just have to show up at the corner of Maple and 50th Street, your parish church, and I'll be there through these things of the earth. It's very, very humbling and powerfully beautiful to think about how close he wants to be with us and how accessible he is to us through the sacraments. And that's why so many people are mourning these days in the midst of the coronavirus, because even that is unattainable. The most ordinary, accessible elements of the earth, where Jesus wants to give us his power and his presence, is inaccessible these days because of the sorrow that we're in.
Yeah, we really, I don't want to be so glib and say, well, we took it for granted and now it's been taken away from us, and as though we are in time out. I can't believe that it is that simple. There's a great mystery here, isn't there?
Yeah, it's never cause and effect that way, I don't think, with God. People, you know, in our simplicity, in our inability to stay with mystery, we always want to do cause and effect. And then we always project onto God, you know, like you just said, which is very common, you know. God's mad at us. We should have paid more attention. We should have paid more attention to these sacraments. Now we lost them. See? And that's infantile. It's deeper, it's broader, it's more complex than that because sin is involved. Sin, finitude, limit, our own mortality is involved. When we're dealing with something as large as a pandemic, we are in the very mystery of fallen human nature. And so it's not a matter of, oh, you were ungrateful, now I'm taking this away. But in our need for consolation, deeply in a need to understand, we simplify these mysteries because to live in them sometimes gives us vertigo. As we said the other day, if we are simply attached to this passing age and not attached to Holy Communion, it gives us vertigo that to think, there's got to be a reason for this. And so I can't live without a reason. And so maybe the reason is I should have been more grateful and God took them away. Well, that might placate a little bit or give you some sense of order, but I don't think that's true. It's true that we live in mystery all the time, and the veil has been pulled aside now, and we're feeling mystery even more readily and more deeply, because we just have to go forward in faith. And all these great mysteries, especially the mystery of our fallen human nature, is coming to the fore during this Holy Week, which should really make our worship, even at our dining room tables, watching Pope Francis on TV, make that worship even more deep, because we're right in the midst of it. We're right in the midst of touching and experiencing and knowing that this world is not sufficient in its own way. It needs to be connected to God and the supernatural. There's something broken in us, and we have to bring that brokenness to Him through the sacraments.
There was a time, I think, that St. Thomas Aquinas even argued that the feet washing might be considered an eighth sacrament. I think I've heard that before. Aquinas scholars might quibble with that a little bit. Maybe that's too simplistic, but there is that was an action of Christ, that washing of the feet. Mm-hmm. What have you reflected on in that particular gesture, the Mass, throughout the years that you've been a part of that, and particularly as a deacon?
Well, the hint of it, as I said before, the hint of the diaconate is in there. Cardinal Casper even explicitly said it was the initiation of the diaconate. Nobody really followed him on that, but there is some speculation about that. Nobody contradicted him really either, but mm-hmm. he said it and he wrote about it. And then there's the larger meditations on the church as diaconate from that moment. Mm-hmm. So the whole church is a diaconal church from that moment. And so there could be a sacrament in there, but it's already the one sacrament of holy orders, and it's already the sacrament of baptism. So it wouldn't be an eighth sacrament necessarily, but there would be sacramental expression in that action of Jesus. The way I would look at it is the foot washing is actually the fruit of the reception of Holy Communion. That as we participate more deeply in the Eucharist, we are then invited by Christ being so alive in us to be more like Him and to become like His actions of charity. And so the foot washing scene is the effect of the Mass rather than a new sacrament, I would say.
Yeah, it's such a key moment that we don't see that in the other Gospels. We see it in John. John is mm-hmm. the one that brings us that. Why do you suppose that is? I mean, the great contemplative is the one that chronicles that particular moment.
Yeah, because probably contemplation leads you to the beauty of contemplation, beholding the beauty of Christ as mystery, leads the contemplative to know more than most people. That contemplation is never an end in itself. Contemplation is always the footing or the foundation or the security that then pushes you out or enables you to move into the action of charity. So it wouldn't surprise me that a contemplative would reflect on action, because a contemplative has peered very deeply into the very beauty and the mystery of the identity of Christ, and he knows that the identity of Christ is not static. The identity of Christ is a mission, and that foot washing scene is the mission of the whole church, instantiated perhaps in a diaconal figure of the ordained deacon, but it's the mission of the church to be missionary. And a contemplative would see that very clearly, because they are so enamored with the person of Christ themselves.
This really is a contemplative time, isn't it? I mean, everybody has had to just stop. The routines have been upended. You are forced to stay in or change your patterns. And it's much quieter. I mean, the setting, the environment has been altered. And a lot of people are sitting and wondering why or what or how. And those are contemplative movements, aren't they, in a way?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And even the quiet of the culture at this point, you know, the one activity that most Americans are doing now is walking. And when you go outside, like in my neighborhood, I had no idea we had so many babies in our neighborhood. Because there are tons of strollers being walked by couples now. And every day they're out with their children. It's like couples playing with their kids in the front lawn, reading stories to them outside. So there's a lot of quiet going on, a reappropriation of the very meaning of their lives, which is, in this case, the sacrament of marriage. So it's a contemplative time in the sense that we are brought down to the foundations, brought down to the very core of who we are. And we are seeing that relationships really are what keeps us alive and helps us to thrive. And these distractions that we have been known for over the last 30 years in our culture, all the distractions, you know, the sports distraction, the distraction of entertainment, all the theaters are closed, all the plays are done, all the restaurants are closed. These distractions are disabled, and people are now enabling the foundational part of their lives. And this foundational part of their lives has always been as close to them as their own breath. They've just been so distracted they didn't know it. So now you see mothers being motherly in public, and fathers being fatherly, and men being husbandly, and women being wifely in public as they're walking and playing and talking in the neighborhood. It's quite beautiful to see, and becomes an object of contemplation for ourselves to wonder whether or not such parts of this simple living can remain when the economic complexity roars back after the virus is gone.
Right.
Can we preserve any of what we're discovering now?
Yeah, that's the thing about this. I mean, a lot of times we are feeling moved to a crescendo because it's Easter. You know, mm-hmm. We feel like we're moving spiritually to this crescendo. But this period is not stopping. This moment, you know, is actually, we have at least several more weeks of this type of activity in our lives, of a non-activity, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity, isn't it, that as we enter into it, that I'm thinking of people that would have been brought into the church through baptism or into full communion at the rites at Easter, that there's a period called mystagogia that is supposed to be, okay, you've done all the catechizing, you've done all the study, you've listened to all the podcasts, you've done everything, and now it's the time to allow grace to move in. And what will you experience? What will he say to you? It's a different, you read the scriptures different, you do everything, it's just a little different because now grace is pouring in. Do you suppose that's an opportunity for us too, as we live through this tritium, that after this, you know, even the walks with the earbuds in the ears, will the earbuds come out?
Yeah. I like that point very much about we're looking forward to something, and you may be looking forward to something to end, and it's not going to end, you know, whether it's the demarcation of Easter or the demarcation of the end of April. But because what that unveils again is the fact that we're still not living in the present, and we're still not enjoying deeply enough our families, the quiet, opportunities for prayer, maybe even contemplative reading. Everyone's playing games now in their home again, games in groups, not games online by themselves or electronically. So the present moment, sometimes we haven't really tasted deep enough because we're still saying, this is going to end soon. And we're already looking toward this mythical end of when this isolation will be over. And we may be missing the greatest gift that God is pulling out of this evil, which is to pay attention to the present moment, pay attention deeply to the people around you, enjoy them in such simplicity that a new simplicity will enter you. So to some extent, if we could begin to practice not looking forward to the end of this coronavirus and going deep into the moments of simplicity that we are forced to live in now, some of the fruit of that may last once we are back to quote unquote normal.
Yeah, I think that's something that we really have to kind of ponder in all that. I mean, because this is a gift. It just as the gathering of all of those apostles together on that Holy Thursday night, you know, that Last Supper, that was a real gift that mm-hmm. he was giving them. And maybe they didn't even, you know, they couldn't even conceive really of what was going to come next, just hours away. So much so mm-hmm. that they fell asleep, you know, because the anticipation of what might occur. But that was a real, it's like we're being given that opportunity of a Holy Thursday in our homes and with our families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're always, it's a human nature. I mean, it's hard to say. We always say, you know, try to live in the present moment. Mm-hmm. But that's a real grace to live in the present moment. And to live in the present moment as grace is something we need to be asking for now. It may not be easily attained or easily appropriated, but we will miss something very vital if we're not going deep and we're just going toward fantasy to the future and daydreaming about when this will be over, and even emotionally anticipating it, thinking that I'm happy now because I'm thinking this won't last forever. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, a lot of goods are present where you should be going deep into the relationships of the home, even into the relationship somewhat of suffering, but not to utilize suffering, but to just realize that even in suffering, there is a presence emerging from him, because obviously he's dwelling within us. And so we never utilize suffering, but within suffering itself, if we can pay attention to it, we may linger there long enough to allow his presence to come, whether it's a suffering of the end of our daily routine, which we're all suffering now, or the horrific suffering of sickness itself, which is so sacred that only the sick should really talk about it. But we have testimony from the saints that in the midst of sickness, sometimes they sense his presence emerging as they pay attention to their own limit and finitude and weakness. And he comes from within to minister to them. So the whole theme of, are you living in the present moment, is truly the contemplative gift that perhaps God is giving all of us now. And we don't want to miss the hour of our visitation.
Yeah. Again, in that great culmination of this moment, he says, do this in remembrance of me. I mean, from what I hear you saying, it's like everything we do should be in remembrance of him. In a way, he's in all of these things. And in no way am I diminishing the importance of the Eucharist. I'm not trying to say that other... it's more of an and both. It's not an either or. Mm-hmm. And somehow, if I say that the presence of him in my husband is, you know, in our marriage and in our children, that's precious. Mm-hmm. You know, that needs to be reverenced and cherished too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not a diminishment of the Eucharist, but if we find ourselves in the absence of the Eucharist, so we are We are wondering about the Eucharist, and we're also saying, hey, I wonder if that other aspect of our faith we can touch now. And that other aspect of our faith is the continual indwelling of the Holy Spirit. So yes, he's fully present in the Eucharist, but he's also within us as Holy Spirit. And this time of our life, we are trying to maybe cultivate a sensitivity to that form of his presence too. And while affirming the Eucharist, we're also affirming this fullness of presence. And this is what the Eucharist has done for us. To some extent, the Eucharist has prepared us for this time, because the Eucharist is all pervasive in our imaginations. It makes us think a different way of thinking, imagine a different way of life. If we're really receiving Jesus, then we're really becoming Jesus. And as we are becoming Jesus, then we take on a new mind, a new imagination. And the end product of the Eucharist is the washing of the feet, which means you are becoming a person that you weren't before, because even the symbol of the foot washing was scandalous to the apostles, because someone of Jesus' stature should not do that. Right. Only a person of a certain stature should do that, a servant. But we're all becoming these servants through the Eucharist. And so our minds are being changed by the Eucharist. We're becoming more sensitive to his indwelling. We're becoming more sensitive to his voice, which says, go, serve. Go and do the thing that maybe you resist somewhat, which is to forget the self and think of others. All of these are the effects of the Eucharist. Even looking for him in the quiet of our heart, in our corner chair, in our room, with having the churches closed, is the effect of the Eucharist, because the Eucharist is solidifying the relationship that we have with the indwelling Spirit. And so your quiet prayer in your home now is Eucharistic, as a fruit of all those Eucharists you have received over your life.
Now, that's something to ponder, isn't it? As we close this conversation on Holy Thursday and the commemoration of the Lord's Supper, what would you have that person who's listening to you now, as a deacon, if you were up and at the Ambo and there are all these multitudes listening to you, what would you hope that they would walk away with?
Well, I would say just obviously go to the scriptures, whether to John's gospel or the other gospels, and just sit quietly with the expressions of the Last Supper there in Revelation. And just let each word drift into your heart more deeply, whether it's, you know, the great gift, do this in memory of me, this is my body, this is my blood given to you, whether it's the actual action in John's gospel of do these charitable acts, but just quietly appropriate the images and the words of Holy Thursday through the scriptures and ask for the grace to, yes, be more grateful for the Eucharist, be more joyful in our celebration of it, and be more vocal in our sharing that it exists on this planet. In other words, be missionaries and make sure that we gently invite others to come and see and experience the power and the presence of Jesus through the things of the earth, because that was his will, to be so close to us so that we knew we weren't left orphans by God. And so if you really believe in Holy Thursday, then we will really gently and emphatically invite others into this beauty as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Deacon Keating.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Mystery of Holy Thursday 2020 with Deacon James Keating. To hear and or to download this conversation, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find it on numerous podcast streaming platforms, as well as the free Discerning Hearts app. To watch the video of this conversation, visit discerninghearts.com or the Discerning Hearts YouTube channel. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, and if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we pray that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time. God bless.